rather than putting a range or a price like most agents do, and that once again either detracts or attracts buyers to the property, this is live, it's real, it's facts, it's evidence that there is a buyer out there with a price on this property at X, and then that will do one of two things. Buyers will see great value and turn up to the open home, or they won't. And yeah, the vendor can really see the true value of the property. And that's why vendors love this process, because they can see exactly at any given time how the market is performing based on the current bid that they've got.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. Each episode, we bring you the best minds in business and real estate to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.
Hey, hey, we're back.
We're back.
Welcome again to another episode of the Elevate podcast. I'm Mark Edwards from Elite Agent.
And I'm Samantha McLean, editor of Elite Agent.
When we say we're back, it's not really we, it's you.
It's me, I'm back. You're back. I was in Geelong, which is a long way from home.
It was a long way from home. It's sort of like a bit of a plane and long car trip.
A plane and a long car trip, yeah, with Casey McDonald and Tamika Smith. It was super fun. Anyway, it was for the property management learning retreat. And, in Geelong. So, and those property managers know how to have a good time.
So you say.
Just saying. But in the middle of, like, a heap of sessions and networking and stuff like that, there's super fun activities, I managed to squeeze in a podcast with Will Ainsworth from McGrath Geelong.
Now, I remember Will Ainsworth's name very well because we were at the McGrath Awards a few months ago.
Frocked up.
Had the old Manu jacket on.
Yep.
And I'll tell you what. It was almost felt like every other award was Will Ainsworth and the team from McGrath and Geelong.
They were on stage a lot, which is what made me go seek him out, actually, because I was keen to know, well, the regions haven't done so badly this year, as everyone's sort of saying the markets down the East Coast have been a bit soft. But the regions, and there are some regional centres, have been doing really well. Geelong is one of those areas, so they've had a lot of investment from the Victorian government around the university and stuff like that. Yeah, so Will Ainsworth and his team, basically, he's placed in the top 2% of industry professionals for number of sales in Victoria.
Wow.
And he has an impressive auction clearance rate of over 90%. Now, that's also a little bit unusual for a regional area because traditionally, the regions are not auction areas. They're more private treaty areas. But basically, Will has carved himself out a name for being the top auctioneer in that region.
I think he's also got like a little bit of an extra part of that auctioneering activity that he does, isn't he?
Well, he does. He's an innovator. And as we've seen, you know, there's various prop tech trends have kind of sprung up over the last 12 months. And one of them is not just the trend to online auctioneering, but the trend to doing deals online. And he uses a tool called Open Negotiation to do his tool. So basically, you're sitting in a listing presentation with Will, and he'll lay it out, private treaty, open negotiation, auction, and he'll explain the benefits of each one to the person that he's listing with. But I guess having those options and being a master of those options is what allows him to convert those listings.
And picking the right one for the right moment and the right type of client that you're working with.
Yeah, exactly. And basically, so we talked about all of them and we talked about his approach to auction and things like that. But I guess what was really interesting too about what I really dug into the stuff with Open Negotiation, because he's given us a case study of how this all works. So basically, compared to something traditional, Open Negotiation allows a level of transparency that is not, I wouldn't call it eBay, but
it's probably the easiest way to be able to get your head around it,
from what I've been told. In the beginning it is, because if you think about it, so basically whatever the current bid is on the Open Negotiation platform is what you see on realestate.com.au. So you know how each property has a price on realestate.com.au? Well, so the current bid on Open Negotiation is what people see.
Oh, really?
So it's not like you can sort of be over or under quoting or anything like that. It's just like the ultimate in transparency. And then it's really interesting the way that the deals get wrapped up. And of course, Will goes through all of this on the podcast as well. And it's quite an exciting process where during negotiations or during the last little bit of the auction, Will go over to the vendor's house and they'll be able to see him in action on the phone to buyers and stuff like that real time while this is going on.
Wow.
So it is, you know, and super nice guy.
Excellent.
Super, super nice guy.
Excellent. What do you think are going to be the big takeaway from this podcast for the audience?
Well, I think, so Will has built an amazing team and an amazing team culture, and he's been an innovator in a regional area. So I think number one is, you know, even though people might say, well, my market's different, I think Will's kind of proof that best practice works anywhere. Also, the thing is to try new things. So Will's very big on trying different things with vendors and making sure that, you know, he's always playing with a straight bat with these vendors, which is, you know, something that's so important in real estate. And the other thing I think that is really interesting about Will is his approach to work-life balance. So, like, he was quite open with me towards the end about how you can really let real estate consume you, but being a co-director of a business and leading a team of people that is growing.
Man, that sounds like an always-on type of role.
Yeah, very always-on, but Will is a big advocate for looking after yourself as well.
I'm sure there were going to be tons of takeaways in this particular episode.
Definitely. So we have two things, actually. So number one is we have the usual show notes and the usual transcript, and we have an action guide for this one. Mm-hmm. There's a special link there to a case study with Will on how he uses open negotiation, which is pretty interesting. So if you've been on the fence about looking at some of these online platforms, that's a really good one to download. So you'll get the links to that as well, plus all of the little value bombs and things like that that Will dropped along the way. And there was a lot of them.
So the case study will be in the post that's accompanying the actual podcast itself, but it'll also have the short link in the action guide, so it'll always be with you.
That's it. And as usual, all the other links to anything else that Will mentions in the podcast will be in the show notes.
And to get the show notes?
EliteAgentElevate.com.
Excellent. So it sounds like this is going to be a great one to listen to. I really like the idea of having the, you know, sort of the easy differentiation between the three different selling models. I'm really looking forward to listening to this one. Let's get onto it.
So welcome to the podcast, Will Ainsworth.
Thank you for having me, Sam.
It's awesome to be here in Geelong. Lovely sunny weather we're having.
Yeah, if only people could see that it's actually quite not.
So you cleaned up at the McGrath Awards this year. I was there and I kept seeing you and the team getting up on stage.
Yeah.
So firstly, congratulations.
Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah, it's nice to be recognised amongst a pretty good brand.
Well, yeah, some of the awards that are given out, you know, the franchise awards are just really reflective of, particularly when it's competitive like McGrath.
Yeah.
So tell me, I mean, you know, we're in a regional area of Geelong, but tell me, what does it take to be one of the best offices in a network like McGrath?
It's a really good question. A lot of hard work, I guess, is the simple answer, but it's built up over a long, sustained period of time. We haven't just woken up one day and been where we are now. So it's about having a great team around you and creating a culture where everyone wants to work hard for themselves and the business. And that just reflects in everything we do from day to day.
Yeah. And so tell me a little bit about the office in Geelong. How big is it? How many people do you have? What's the team look like?
Yep. So we've got about 42 staff, I think it is at last count, spread over property management, sales, admin, accounting, etc. And we've just ticked over 970 properties under management. We do have a target. We did have a target by 2020 to have 1,000. So we'll well and truly exceed that, which is nice. And we've got about 8 salespeople with a host of assistants and helpers around them. So it's a pretty big team now.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's the market like here in Geelong? Because there's a lot of talk about the market being not so great over the last 12 months, but in some of the regions here, it's been quite good.
Yeah. Geelong definitely did experience a little bit of a dip when Melbourne and Sydney did, but we tend to follow the Melbourne market by sort of 6 or 12 months, so we can always look up there for a forecast on how Geelong will perform. But we definitely don't have the peaks and troughs and the spikes that, say, Melbourne and Sydney have. But Geelong's just steadily grown ever since I've been in real estate. So it's a great market.
Yeah. So tell us about how you got into real estate. How long have you been in real estate?
It's probably not the most romantic story, but I pretty much had nothing else to do. So that's the short of it. And my dad said, you talk a lot of shit, so you'd be good at selling houses. So he just said, you should try real estate. So I got my agent's rep. He forced me to do that. And then 2 weeks later, he got me a job in a local firm. And before I knew it, I was kind of half decent at it. And I've just built a career from there. So that was about 15 years ago that I started. And I have been at a number of offices in Geelong, but settled very well in what was Ray White and now McGrath, and I've been there for about 7 years now.
Yeah, and you've recently just bought into the business as well.
Yeah. So a couple of years ago I thought it was time to take the next step and bought into the business, and it's been thoroughly enjoyable because it's being a business owner versus a real estate agent are really chalk and cheese. So I've had to learn a lot about myself and how to run a business. So it's been great.
Yeah, and you still list and sell as well, like personally as well as running part of the business. So how do you balance those two?
Yeah, so the fortunate thing is there are three of us. So we definitely have areas of the business that we focus on, and mine is definitely listing and selling and running the sales team. So that's kind of my baby. The other two look after, they also list and sell, but they look after more property management, the running day-to-day of the business. But I would say 80 to 90% of my day job is still listing and selling, which is what I love.
So how many listings would you carry at any one time?
At the moment, I've got 30, which is a lot more than I usually do. So I would usually average around sort of 15 to maybe 20, but it's just been a phenomenal last couple of months where we've just listed, I listed 20 properties in September. I think I'm up to 10 now this month. So business has all of a sudden just gone to the next level again. Yeah. So I would usually carry 15 to 20.
Yeah. It's definitely a momentum thing, isn't it? The more momentum you get, the more momentum
you get. Yeah. Yeah. It's the more, as they say. So the more boards you've got up, the more sold stickers, the more clients that are out there talking about you and in a good way, hopefully. Just means that, yeah, it kind of just snowballs, which is it's great because the amount of hard work you do to push that big boulder to actually start rolling down the hill to gain momentum is really hard and challenging. But once you get going, you still have to keep pushing though. That's the thing, is it?
Yeah.
Think of a lot of agents that are successful, rest on their laurels and stay at the same level for year after year, and they can't then take the next step. It's just a matter of continuing on.
Yeah. And so what were some of the things that you did in the early days to get that ball really rolling? Because I'm sure that, the main challenges we're hearing for agents at the moment is that, they're finding it difficult to know when to take an extra team member on, and, you know, what were some of the things that you did early in your career? What were some of the things that if you could travel in a time machine back to there that you would do more quickly?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And it's not one thing, it's a whole host of things, but the day I started back in real estate, it's a long story, but I got out of real estate for a little while. So let's just say that the day I started back, I got an assistant from day one.
Yeah.
And I knew that that was the most important thing because I knew my time needed to be spent on prospecting and listing and selling and negotiating. So the more time I could put into that and have someone else do all the back end work, the better I'd be. So it is taking that leap and just knowing that there's really no plan B. That was sort of the first thing that I did to ensure that things went well. But it's just doing the 1%ers every single day to make sure that all the clients that you have are consistently happy and the prospecting remains regardless of how much or how little business you have. You have to have that time in your day where no matter how crazy your day is going, that you put aside to do what got you where you are, which is, prospecting and talking to people who are thinking of selling.
Yeah. And so that would be the core activity for you now is still just talking to people in your database about the market, about their houses.
Yeah, it's really, my philosophy is just helping people. That's all we're doing. So when I'm calling someone who may not be selling for 5 years is telling them about how the market is, telling them about recent sales, providing them information so that, the world is full of information that's free, but people don't know what sold yesterday unless I tell them. So it's about the speed of letting people know so that I'm not telling them stuff they already know. I'm the voice of information. And as they say, be the real estate agent before they need that real estate agent.
Yeah. It's kind of the why too, isn't it? Because, things may sell, but then they may sell above or below what you thought they would. And someone like you that's been around this area would be able to say, well, that one sold for $15,000 above what we thought it would because.
Yeah. The story behind the sale is absolutely right, Sam. It's the sold price is one thing, but it's how many bidders did you have? Where did the buyer come from? The people that missed out, what's their demographic? And the story behind the sale, I think, is what a lot of people like to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. What about auctions in Geelong? Mm. Is a big auction market?
Yeah, and that's actually, probably should have answered that earlier. The way I kind of got ahead at one stage was I work in an area called Geelong West, which has about 4,000 homes. That's where I sort of predominantly do most of my business. And back in about 2007, no one did auctions then.
And
I wanted to create a point of difference, and private sale was what everyone did. So I thought, well, if I can get some auctions underway and be that person, if you want to sell your house in a good time frame for a great price, that you come to me. And so I sort of forged ahead with that auction process, and that's really what leveraged my business to the next level, where people came to me if they wanted to auction their property. And then now 95% of properties in Geelong West are auctioned. And I'm not saying that is attributed for me, but I was just doing something when everyone else was doing something. I was doing kind of the opposite. And that's what I've always wanted to do, because as they say, if you squint, most agents look the same. And if you can make a point of difference that even if people are squinting, that we don't look the same, then I want to be that person that people look to for a different process.
I'm actually a big fan of that as a marketing tactic, because then you can easily sort of say against other agents, well, I'm the number one auction agent in this area because there is nobody else.
Correct.
It's about finding a niche.
If you're the only one that's doing it,
you're definitely the number one.
Yeah,
absolutely. And technology also plays a big role in your business too.
Yeah.
So I know in terms of, you know, private treaty and auction, you guys use a tool called Open Negotiation as well.
Yes.
Which is where people can put bids on a property, as I understand, using an app. Can you explain to me how that works in your business?
So pretty much, well, as I said, 2007 I started doing auctions, and now everyone does auctions. So then I was looking for that next point of difference. And it also came at a time where the banks, you know, under the Royal Commission, looked into the banking industry. It was very difficult for a lot of buyers to get finance and in a timely manner. So I was doing lots of auctions where I had ample buyers but no bidders, because they couldn't actually bid under an unconditional process. So I found that a little bit of a silly outcome, because I had people that wanted to buy the home and compete, but they couldn't due to that reason. So Open Negotiation allows all buyers, regardless of their terms, if the vendor chooses to accept those terms, to compete for the property. So it's essentially an auction where the competition is there, which competition, in my opinion, always drives the highest price. But it also allows buyers who can't bid at a traditional auction to compete. So more buyers, competitive environment, means a higher price in a shorter space of time. So in essence, that's what Open Negotiation is. But I only do something that benefits vendors and buyers and me. And so from the buyer's point of view, it's a completely transparent process like a normal auction is, where the buyers can see at any given time the current bid, how many bidders there are, and have comfort around where the value of the property lies, as opposed to private sale or treaty, where it's a bit of cloak and daggers, put your best offer in an envelope. I'm not telling you what the other bid is.
Yeah, there it is, slated under the table, yeah.
Yeah, what do I need to pay? Well, I can't tell you.
Yeah.
That, to me, that's, I mean, real estate agents don't have the best, most trustworthy nature as it is, so I don't want people to not engage in buying a property if they feel they can't know what to pay. So, as I said, the auction process allows competition, which allows buyers to pay what they think is a fair value, and social proof goes to show if someone's prepared to pay X, then I'm prepared to pay a little bit more, and then the other buyer's prepared to pay a little bit more, and hence why you see 100,000 above reserve, 200 grand above reserve, because that's the true test of the market.
Yeah, so with Open Negotiation, how does it work in practice? How does it work in the wild?
Yeah, okay, it's a really good question. So essentially Open Negotiation is a hybrid of private sale or treaty and auction. And the private sale part is it allows conditional buyers to compete for the property or be involved in the process. And the auction part is it's basically a competitive environment where all the buyers compete to find out what the eventual sale price is. So in principle, it is at the open home, people come in and get qualified to bid. So they put in a starting price. It doesn't have to be what they think it's worth. It's just a start, like it would be with a normal auction. And then they have to get qualified to bid. So they're signing off on their terms and contract, and they're signing off on their terms and conditions. And the vendor then signs off on those to say they're happy with that said buyer's terms and conditions. And then they're a qualified bidder.
Yeah.
And that the current bid is always the advertised price. So that's probably the key to it, is that if their current bid is lower than what the perceived value is, then you attract a lot of buyers to the property and then you work up from there. And then as the price goes up, then the interest starts to drop off. Like any normal auction, you know, when you get to the pinnacle of a price point, there's only one or two left. Once you get to a price that the owner is relatively comfortable with, then you can do what we call the final bidding stage, which is kind of like the auction, but it's done via the app.
So it's like the going once, going twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as much as I don't like to say this, it's almost like the eBay part where it counts down to a timeline.
Yeah.
But at that timeline, that's when it starts, not where it ends, like eBay. So at, say, 6 p.m. on Tuesday night, all the bidders, wherever they are in the world, they just need an internet connection and an iPhone or an iPad. They can see the current bid, and each bidder has 2 minutes to beat the previous bid. And once a new bid is made, a two-minute clock restarts. So it can go on for as long as the market continues to go on. Everything's subject to the vendor's reserve, like a normal auction. So the vendor has comfort that if it doesn't meet their reserve price, they just don't sell. So all the buyers can see all the bids at any given time, and it's a completely transparent process. So for me, that works for the buyer because they know what to pay. It works for the vendor because they can see where the value of the property or the buyers are starting to tap out, so to speak, because the current bid is always the advertised price. And for the agent, it allows us to determine exactly how many bidders you've got and where they're all at any given time.
So let's say property comes on the market, gets listed on realestate.com.au or domain.com.au mm-hmm. with the price that initially goes into open negotiation.
Yeah.
And then as people start putting bids in, then that price actually goes up
yeah.
like live on the portal.
Yes.
So every time somebody's searching for a property, they can see whatever the current
correct
price is. Wow, that's pretty...
Yeah, like, it's amazing.
People must love that.
Oh, like, they do. And that's what I said, is that rather than putting a range or a price like most agents do, and that, once again, either detracts or attracts buyers to the property, this is live, it's real, it's facts, it's evidence that there is a buyer out there with a price on this property at X, and then that will do one of two things. Buyers will see great value and turn up to the open home, or they won't. And yeah. the vendor can really see the true value of the property. And that's why vendors love this process, because they can see exactly at any given time yeah. how the market is, how it's performing based on the current bid that they've got.
Yeah. And then I suppose, like, let's say things aren't performing exactly the way that you would want them to before we get down to the pointy end, which I want to come back to, because that sounds quite exciting, actually.
Yeah, it is. Very.
So let's say we're a week into this and the price isn't quite what the vendor thought it might be. Mm-hmm. What do you do then? Is it just you go back and have the normal conversations about marketing and stuff like that?
Yeah, so it's a matter of trying to rectify what issues there may or may not be. And typically, if a property's not selling or getting interest, it's based on the presentation, price or marketing.
Yeah.
And we look at the marketing and make sure we're comfortable with everything that has been addressed. Does the property look its best? And then I suppose the third one is, where's the price point at? And that's, once again, the conversations we have are not as confrontational as they usually are with a normal auction or private treaty
yeah.
because the vendor, they're part of it. They can see at any given time how it's going. So usually they're the first to actually address it, not us. And it's a more of a partnership process rather than agent versus vendor. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. Often I think the problem agents face, particularly in a market that's going down, is when they go to the vendor to give them feedback to say, actually, you know, look, we had six people through the open for inspection and, you know, they think they're saying it's around this, but the vendor's thinking around that. Mm-hmm. There's often cause for the vendor to kind of go, well, hang on a second, what the agent's saying is, mm-hmm. you know,
yep.
not what we believe. But then what I'm guessing is that when everything's out in the open there and transparent as
yeah.
it gets,
yeah.
those conversations probably are less and less.
Yeah, they absolutely are. Yeah, as I said, it's very much the vendor can see exactly what's going on, and the open homes are a different process as well, because it's not a matter of just letting buyers in and then asking them on the way out, what did you think? Do you like it or not? And they say, I don't know, we'll go and think about it.
Yeah.
This process, the property can sell at any time. And so what that does is it actually makes buyers make decisions on the run. So if a buyer walks out from an open home, I remind them, do you realise this property can sell tomorrow under this process? Do you have interest at 600,000 where the current bid is? No, we don't. Okay, thank you. The vendor can see that.
Yep, so that creates a bit of urgency too. Yeah.
Like, yes, we do. Great, we're going to have to come inside and we'll get you qualified to bid on this home, because if it sells tomorrow, the only people that can actually be in this process are qualified bidders.
Yeah.
So it's very much a black and white. There's no grey. Do you want to buy the property at this current bid or a bit more, or do you not?
Yeah.
And as I said, it's a much different dialogue with the buyer. And most auction campaigns, I'll call the whole open for inspection, every person that's come through the campaign, could be 50, could be 100, and ask them all, are you going to be at the auction tomorrow? Are you going to be at the auction tomorrow? What are you thinking? And maybe one or two who I've gained a lot of trust with will say, yeah, we'll be there, Will. Everyone else says, I'm not sure. We'll see how we go.
Yeah.
How do I relay that to the vendor? Oh, they're all going to see how they go. Does that allow them to sleep very well the night before the auction?
Yeah.
Whereas with this, Mr. and Mrs. Vendor, we have five qualified bidders. We're now sitting at 700,000. Your reserve is X. All we have to do is get an extra 50 to meet your reserve, but that's my job and I'll be doing that for you. It's a much more comfortable, easy conversation to have, and they are there with you. And I'm not having to call 50 or 100 people. I'm calling the five bidders that we have to say, you're aware that the property is going to final bidding stage tomorrow at 6. Is there anything else we can help you with? Make sure you've got a good internet connection. That's it.
And that's it. So I remember back when eBay first started, like looking at this pointy end of the, I had a pram to sell.
Yeah.
And I remember I had it very different to a property, obviously, but I had it on eBay for about a week and nothing really happened until about an hour before the deadline, in which case, you know, like 80 bids came in the space of like 1 hour.
Yeah.
Is that what happens with this too? And I'm really simplifying.
No. Yes and no. But as if on eBay, it's said that the property could sell it or the pram could sell at any time.
Yeah.
I think the bids would have come in earlier.
Yeah, right.
So with this process, even though the final bidding stage is typically set 4 weeks out from when it goes to market, like a normal auction campaign, the key to this is that final bidding stage can be brought forward at any time. So it's a very flexible process where if you have enough bidders and you have enough buyers, we can do the final bidding stage tomorrow morning at 8 a.m.
Yeah.
So you're not leaving the buyers hanging out there at risk of going to find another property or going cold on the property.
Yeah.
You're maximizing the bidders that you've got and you're not leaving it, as I said, sitting out there hoping that you find any other bidders because you've already got them.
Yeah.
That's if the property starts to get a bit cold where you're not getting any more buyers through the property, no more inquiry. That's the time where you can start doing that final bidding stage.
Yeah, and that's where your skill as an agent comes in to know when to sort of hit that button to say, all right, that's it, we're going to land this plane.
Yeah, so some stats behind it are, prior to doing this, I looked at my previous 10 sales, the first 10 sales I did via open negotiation. I was averaging 32 days on market via the normal processes. I'm now averaging 16 days on market.
All right, wow.
So it's literally half. I'm averaging 4.3 bidders per property, where I was averaging 1.7 bidders per property under the normal auction process. And I'm getting twice the buyers through my properties on open homes. So the numbers are more than double or less than half, whichever stat you want to look at. It's very compelling.
And I'm assuming it's not hard to get people to, or let's say buyers, to appreciate the process either. Like, you know, like when you said you have to get them, qualify them, get them to sign up, I was sort of thinking, okay, that's another step. But how easy is it to get buyers to actually just get in there and get qualified?
It takes me about 5 minutes.
Okay.
So it's just a matter of getting the buyer to download the app or go to a browser and just open up the website. And then all they do is find the property, put a pending bid in. Now, the pending bid is just the number that they want to start at.
Yeah.
And they press submit, and all that does is alert me to the fact they want to become a qualified bidder. And then we bring out the paperwork, which is all we're filling in is the normal details you would fill in on a normal contract, except for the price.
Yeah.
So purchaser's name, their address, their solicitor, their deposit, their settlement, and any conditions they want to bid under.
Yeah.
That's a pretty seamless process.
I'm thinking too, it's probably a good way to qualify buyers for other properties that you might have listed too.
Well, we have sold a lot of properties off market due to this process as well, because we have, let's say, five bidders on a property.
Yeah.
We have all of their details. We know what terms they're bidding under and we know what price they bid to. So then when I go to an appraisal the following week, I can say I've now got four buyers left over, and you can see the stats. Open negotiation has a PDF that you can print off that shows where all the bidders were price-wise, not their names or anything. And I've sold plenty of property off market knowing that I've got buyers that have gone to
Out on that one, and then, they're ready to go on that.
And as I said, I know their terms as well. So, once again, it's a pretty compelling process.
So what would you say to agents who are still like, you know, because there are still some out there that are sort of thinking, I need to hold all this information to myself, like to get people to come to me.
So the The only people that will succeed at open negotiation are honest real estate agents, for starters, but real estate agents that there's actually a lot more, not a lot more, there's more work involved in this process, because I just mentioned signing up buyers at open homes.
Mm.
So people might think, oh, well, it's all done online, it just does itself. It's actually quite the contrary. So it does take a bit of time, but once you master that, it's quite an easy process. So all we do is add another 10 minutes to the end of our open homes for those sign-ups.
Yeah.
We then get DocuSign organised to send that document to the vendor for them to sign off. So we've kind of made it quite a seamless process. But those agents that go around telling other buyers they've got offers when they don't, telling them they've got prices when they don't, this won't work for them.
Yeah. Yeah, I can definitely see that.
Yeah.
What about other sorts of technology, like you just mentioned DocuSign? So yeah. If I was to ask you, apart from open negotiation, obviously yeah. DocuSign, how big a role does technology play in
Massive.
Your business?
We use WhatsApp for every single campaign.
Yeah.
So when I sign up a listing, I ask the vendors if they haven't got WhatsApp to do an account. And then because I have a team of four, including me, we are all part of that WhatsApp group. And all the correspondence that's not worthy of a phone call goes in there.
Yeah.
So there's a timeline. If there's two vendors, one's interstate, one's not, or there's a divorce, or there's a deceased estate with three kids that are all, they can all see at any given time what's going on. We put audio messages in there after open homes so they can hear how the open home's gone, proofing their marketing as well. It's all done. And because I'm running around so busy doing listing and selling and negotiating, I want to keep a tab on what's going on with my campaigns as well. So at the end of the day, I can just go through the WhatsApp group and see exactly what's happened that day.
Yeah.
And I'm a bit of a control freak, so I like to see what's going on at any given time.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No. So we use Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn for a lot of our promotions as well. So I can't say we sell a lot of property via that. We have sold them, but it's more of a passive tool, getting people interested in the property. And we do a lot of marketing, as I said, via Facebook and Instagram, and also market updates and wraps. At the end of each Saturday, I give a market update on how that day's progressed, how many numbers we've had through the opens, what I've seen that was different to the previous week, or anything that I think the buying or selling community would like to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you do anything special in terms of marketing the process of open negotiation auctions?
Mm.
Like when you're in a listing presentation, how do you explain that to the vendor?
Pretty much how I have with you.
Yeah.
I'm very much a case studies. Let's talk about what we've done prior and yeah. showing them. There's always stories, and every property I go into, I've probably sold one within a few hundred metres of that. So it's usually bringing out the most relevant property to theirs. But it's also, if I'm thinking I'm going to get a listing in the next 6 months, it's getting that client involved in the process before they're actually going to list. And with open negotiation, you can become what we call an observer. So you can go into open negotiation and follow a campaign and see how it's tracking. And you can watch the final bidding stage. So where in the past I would invite a potential vendor to watch an auction I'm doing, this is kind of the same, where I'm just asking them to watch the campaign, and then once they see it in real life, if they're slightly skeptical of the process and they see how much we get above reserve, or it basically it answers any questions they probably have.
Yeah.
And does every campaign go ridiculously well? No. Some properties we get one bidder in, and this process is very flexible in the fact that if a buyer wants to come in on the first open home and just take it off the market, they can choose to do that. So it doesn't have to go to the final bidding stage. They can put in a price. If the vendor's happy with that price, we can just press a button and sell it to them as a sole bidder, and it's done. It's because it's an auction, there's no cooling off period. So it takes, once again, the benefit, even if it's sold the day one to a buyer via private sale negotiation,
yep.
there's still no cooling off period.
Yeah.
Which is quite good.
Well, so that gives you multiple points of difference in the market.
Yeah.
Like I'm just trying to mentally calculate them in my head, but I'm not going to.
Yeah, there's ample.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And buyers, you know, I've had some people of the older generation say, oh, people won't understand it. You know, if they're, I don't know, 60 years and above, they won't want to engage in this process. So I sold a property where the three bidders on the property were 75, 86 and 95, and they all bid under the open negotiation process, and they actually loved it because they didn't have to turn up to the property to a live auction and stand in front of a crowd of people and put their hand up and say, "This, I'm the buyer for this property," and show their face.
Yeah.
I sold properties to sports people via this process who didn't want to go to the auction and reveal that they're the buyer of the property. They could sit in the comfort of their own home, be anonymous, and buy the property. So once again, not that we would know this, but I imagine there'd be a lot of people out there that don't want to stand it in front of a crowd of 100 people and show them who they are, how much they've got to spend. Yeah, so they can remain anonymous should they want to.
Yeah, I know auctions are quite confronting for a lot of people. Mm. Fun if you're not a serious bidder, I suppose.
Yeah.
But if you really want the place, then
yeah,
actually raising a sweaty palm isn't the easiest thing to do.
Yeah.
For some people.
It's like at a normal auction, you've got pretty much 15 minutes for the vendor and the agent to see what's actually going on. Under open negotiation, that pretty much is just drawn out for the vendor to be able to see and make educated and informed decisions as it's tracking along. So they're just much more guided along the way, and they can see and make, as I said, informed decisions about their reserve. Do they bring it down? Do they put it up? And they can see how many bidders they've got. So when we go to the final bidding stage, okay, we've got four bidders, we're going to get competition, or we've only got two, so we're only as good as our second bidder. So why don't we pass it in and negotiate with the highest bidder? So the tactic and the process we're going via is based on real facts, which is all a vendor wants to see.
Mm. So tell me about the final bidding stage. Tell me about landing the plane. What happens then?
Yeah, it's really exciting. So we tend to go to our vendor's home and we plug my iPad into their TV screen and they get the popcorn and,
all right,
and Coke out.
Sounds like the block.
Yeah, pretty much is, yeah. So we all sit around and wait until 6 p.m. While we're waiting, I'm contacting...
Drinks?
No, you can't sign a contract under the influence, Sam.
Right, so, okay, yeah. Good. Good, glad we cleared that up.
Yeah, yeah. So whilst we're waiting for that to count down, my team and I are contacting the bidders just to make sure everything's going to run smoothly. And then at 6 p.m., we're kind of sitting back and just waiting to see what goes on. Now, me as the agent has the ability to pause that two-minute clock at any time. And the reason I would do that is if we are looking like someone's not going to bid, I can pause that clock and ring that buyer in front of the vendor, not on loudspeaker, but they can hear what I'm saying and they can watch me negotiate. Now, you can't do that with a normal auction. The vendor's usually stuck inside with their ear to the wall trying to hear what's going on out there and yeah, has no power and nothing. They're just hoping. With
through
this,
the curtains.
Yeah, yeah, through the curtains. Now, I'm an auctioneer, so I love auctions, don't get me wrong, but this process allows me to still do my auctioneering. It's just in a different format. So can you imagine if an auctioneer paused an auction and walked over to the second highest bidder and in front of everyone said, "Hey, you need to put in another 10,000 and tried to negotiate with them? It just wouldn't work.
Yeah.
With this, I can contact the second bidder and ask them to put in another bid, tell them reasons why, that they might have forgotten that it's on a bigger block than they thought, or a different orientation, whatever the negotiation is. And the vendor can watch me and listen to my dialogue. So that allows the vendor, once again, to feel more comfort around the fact that they're paying me 2 or 3% to get the best outcome. I'm showing them why I'm worth that 2 to 3%. That's at that time. If I can get an extra 5, 10, 20,000 out of that buyer, that's me paid for plus some.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It is definitely, I think, the way to prove your worth as an agent or as any job is like, you know, like that comedian joke, "Don't tell me you're funny, make me laugh."
Yes, yes, exactly right, yeah.
Yeah, if they can see you in action.
Yeah, and, I mean, you can imagine with a private treaty, when you contact the vendor, it's all done via phone, you contact the vendor and say, "I got you an extra 10. "Yeah, but can't you get me 20? "No, they wouldn't pay 20. "We'll go back and do it again." They can't hear the conversation you've had. They can't hear the dialogue, the tone, how hard you pushed or didn't push based on the personality of the buyer. They can't read all of that.
Yeah.
This, once again, they can sit there and watch it all. And I keep saying it, but they can make much more informed decisions based on those conversations I'm having.
Yeah. So some folks sort of said a few years ago online auctions would never work. Like, there were quite a few different online auction tools that were available, but none of them seem to take off until now. There's a few of them like Open that's really working for you. Do you see that as the way of the future?
I do. I offer vendors all options. I'm not one to just ram it down their throat and say, "You must do this." I offer private sale or treaty, auction and open negotiation. I take them through the pros and cons of all three.
Yeah.
And then I let them make the decision. I guide them because they're asking me for my expertise. And I say, this is what I recommend for your property. However, you're the vendor, you can tell me what you'd like to do. When I take them through all the three campaigns, probably 80 to 90% of them say I'd like to do open negotiation because they can see the reasons why.
Yeah.
If the other, I've got some live, real auctions going on at the moment. I've got a couple of private sales going at the moment. So I'm not just going down that avenue. But as I said, if it works for the buyer and it works for the vendor and it works for the agent, that is a win-win-win.
Yeah.
No one loses in this process.
Yeah.
Everyone wins. So as long as everyone's doing that, I'm pretty comfortable that's the best process for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what is next for you? So you cleaned up at the awards.
Mm.
What are your goals for the next 12 months?
Personally, my goals are to build on what I'm already doing as far as a salesperson. I want to build some more team members around me and build those team members up to be good real estate agents in their own right. In my sort of older age and wisdom, I'm sort of starting to really get intrigued and interested in watching and helping other agents grow. So that's a real key to my business. For me, real estate is always about, and anyone that knows me is about work and life and the balance in between the two. I don't work on Fridays and I don't work on Sundays. I've had a history of mental illness and I've got a young family. And so for me, I keep saying in my head pretty much every day that it's a marathon, not a sprint. And so I've built up incrementally over the years. And to me, that's the way to sustain a good, healthy career in real estate. You can write $1 million 1 year, but if you write $200,000 or you're not in the game the following year, that's a really silly way to look at real estate. So to me, it's building up from year on year, but not doubling or not tripling. It's just building up and maintaining a healthy lifestyle that my family can actually remember that I was around down the track. So that's what I'm about.
So what does performing at your peak look like for you? Like you just mentioned work-life balance, which is a really big topic in the real estate industry at the moment. Like what does a typical day look like for you?
So I tend to get into the office at about 8:30 and I would, these final bidding stages we do for open negotiation tend to be after hours. So that does take a bit more of my time during the week, but because I'm an auctioneer, I'm not doing as many auctions on Saturdays, so I'm sort of giving and taking on either way. But a typical day would look like 8:30, come in, I'd have a whip meeting with my team, talk about what we're going to do that day, what we didn't do the following day, set everyone on their paces and away we go. So I would typically do some prospecting in the morning and then have my, I sort of average 2 to 3 appraisals a day, do those in the afternoon.
Wow, yeah.
And then I would try and be home by 6:30 if possible. Daylight savings is much better because then I can kick the footy or do something with the kids, and that's pretty much my day. Some days are longer, but some days I might finish at 5 and then I'll go home. I don't just stay around for the sake of saying I worked a 60-hour week. If I'm finished my work and I've had a productive day, I'm out of there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. What advice would you give to younger agents getting into the business who are sort of taught to hustle, hustle, hustle?
Learn to say no. The word no is probably the most underutilized word in real estate.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many people have wanted an appraisal on Friday and I've said no and they've said, okay, we'll do Monday. You must control your destiny and your calendar. There are probably 10% in extenuating circumstances that you must do certain things, and I understand that. I'm not just no, no, no for everything, but you must be smart with your time, and if you don't control your diary, other people will, and you'll be pulled from left, right and centre. And you won't be productive mentally, physically, you just won't be. So it is about and setting your calendar for important meetings such as prospecting. Prospecting is more important than appraisal because you only got that appraisal because you prospected.
Yep.
So if you're not prospecting for 2 hours a day, or I'm not saying I'm not a matter of 2 hours a day or a certain amount of calls. I'm about how productive are you during that time? Have you got what you wanted to get? If I was a new agent, I would set timelines because then that creates habits. And once those habits are set, they'll set you for your career and you'll just go 2 hours is easy. Like James Tosterman does 8 hours a day. I can't do that and I will never do that.
He's a machine.
Yeah, he's a machine and great. Like I think that's amazing that he can do that. I can't and I don't want to do that. So I work to my strengths, and that's just being productive in the time that I've got that's how my day and week works.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's a law of diminishing returns too. Like, yeah. You know, you can only be productive for like in the state of your highest productivity rather for like probably 20% of the day.
Yeah, and there's, you know, as people say, there's AM energy and there's PM energy. And in the morning I'm usually pretty productive on the phone.
Yeah.
And then if you have lunch and you start to get a bit lethargic, then you're out in the fresh air and you're at people's houses, you tend to be a bit more energised just by virtue of moving around people. Being around people. So work to your strengths. If you're the opposite, then do your appointments in the morning. Don't follow what everyone does. Just do what works for you and just rip off and duplicate what other good agents do, but then mould it into what works for your personality and your market and your business.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you for being so generous with your knowledge today. It's been amazing to learn about how you take properties to market in all those different ways. If there was one thing that you would like people to remember from listening to this interview with you, what would it be?
It is exactly what we sort of finished on, is that your real estate career, if you look at it, if you come into real estate at 20 and you think you're retiring at 35 would be nice, is to look at that timeline and make sure that you enjoy that. Don't get to the end of it and you may be wealthy, you may be not, but and not have enjoyed that career, because that's your life. That's 50% of your life gone. So make sure that when you're in day to day, you are smelling the roses, you're breathing fresh air when you're outside, and you're not just running around like a headless chook. So all I can say is to just take your time, build incrementally and just sustain that, and take plenty of time off. I do. We've got a caravan, so we go away for long weekends. So I've got little holidays to look forward to. It's kind of like when you're at school and you look forward to the holidays.
Yeah.
If they're 3 or 4 weeks away, you can push hard to there. So, yeah, take as much time off as you can.
Something you look, give yourself something to look forward to.
Yeah. Even if it's a massage on a Friday afternoon, just something that you're filling your bucket up, as we say with our kids, is that you're just doing something for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. Will Ainsworth, yeah. Thank you so much.
Pleasure, Sam. Thanks for having me.
To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.